If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can stay up to date on the app with all the latest news and opinion. Put your news categories in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. You can download the all new official LBC app free from your app store now. Coming up at four, it's Ian Payne, but to get you all the way to four, here's Richard Spur.
Good morning, and just as Simon's been talking about a couple in their 70s winning the right to parent a surrogate baby, I'll be asking for your story if, at an older age or not, you've been a foster or adoptive parent, or if you yourself were brought up by someone who wasn't your biological mum or dad. But first, a voice artist who used to provide the dulcet onboard announcements on ScotRail trains claims that her voice has been cloned by artificial intelligence and is now being used by them instead of her for free. Now, the list of jobs which could soon be replaced by AI and its extraordinary power fair boggles the mind. So after the news, our expert Fevzi Turkout will be on hand to answer your questions live, your fears, hopes or just curiosities on the subject. So call me now, 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, and starting with breaking news this morning, a US federal court has blocked President Donald Trump's so-called Liberation Day tariffs from going into effect. It's ruled that the president overstepped his authority by imposing across-the-board taxes on imports from nations that sell more to the United States than they buy. The Health Secretary is asking resident doctors in England to vote no in a ballot on strikes over pay. Wes Streeting said doctors have lost the support of the public and would choke the NHS by going back on strike. The BMA union wants a 29% rise to restore historical pay freezes. Jamie Jenkins, former head of health stats at the Office for National Statistics, told LBC it's unrealistic.
You've got to remember that most of the junior doctors would have joined after 2008. They signed up knowing the salary, and now they're looking to get the backdated pay pretty much for the job that they already chose. So no one's forced them to come in to become a junior doctor. They knew the pay, the hours and the training part. And to get another 29% pay rise on top of what they've got, it just seems unreasonable. It's not really how the real world works.
Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar, but Israeli forces haven't been able to confirm his death. The Israeli Prime Minister included him on a list of the group leaders killed in a recent airstrike on Gaza. The UN's Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process, Sigrid Karg, has been addressing the UN Security Council.
Civilians in Gaza have lost hope, Mr. President. Instead of saying goodbye, see you tomorrow, Palestinians now say, see you in heaven. Death is their companion. It's not life, it is not hope. Palestinians in Gaza deserve more than survival. They deserve a viable and vibrant future.
UK prosecutors have confirmed for the first time Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan are facing 21 criminal charges. They're accused of rape, human trafficking and prostitution, as well as a number of other offences. The pair are still awaiting trial in Romania and have previously denied all the allegations against them. Chelsea are celebrating ending the season with a trophy after winning the UEFA Conference League. They came from behind to beat Spanish side Real Betis in the final 4-1. LBC weather, rain clearing for most later to leave a windy day with a mixture of sunny spells and showers in the west. Warm in the south with some rain lingering in northern Scotland, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Good morning. It's going to be your opportunity over the next 55 minutes or so to put your questions about AI, artificial intelligence, to our expert Fevzi, who's going to be joining you very shortly. It is something which will, I think, define not just the next decade, but perhaps the next century as it becomes ever powerful and indeed teaches itself to become ever more powerful and protect itself from human interference. It's going to become a part of almost every aspect of our life. And whilst there are a great number of fears about AI and the loss of jobs and the replacement of human skills and abilities, there are equally a great number of hopes and aspirations, for example, in the world of medicine, surgery, the pioneering of drugs and that sort of thing, which makes it a fascinating prospect. And still, I mean, already a great deal of it has made a massive difference to the world of technology and of medicine. The reason that we're talking about this today is because you may have heard me mention briefly yesterday that a voiceover artist is claiming that her voice is being used now for ScotRail's AI-generated announcements without her permission. And she says she feels violated by the experience. And I, as a voiceover artist myself, and what is sometimes perhaps a little irreligiously called a voice of God, you know, that is to say the voice you hear booming out over larger arenas and on TV programmes, that sort of thing, I myself would feel violated if this had happened to me. And I have friends who work in radio and in the voiceover industry who are equally fearful of it happening to them. This is a lady called Gayenne Potter. She's also ITN's voice of God. I'm sorry if that phrase offends you. It's a sort of industry term. And the female station voice for Heart Scotland. She said that she was unaware that her voice had been made into an artificial intelligence version until she heard it on one of the trains, on one of the trains in Scotland that she was using. And it sounded exactly like her. But she knew it wasn't her because she hadn't done a recent session for them with what it was saying. It's called Iona, the new announcer. It's very sort of de rigueur at the moment to give AIs names. You'll find this if you have a sort of online chat with your banking app or if you call up your broadband provider. It'll say, hi, my name is whatever, and I'm here to help you. But actually, it's not a real person. She says the Swedish technology has used her voice. And although, of course, you know, this is something which is going to save them a great deal of money, it's going to mean that she is going to lose out. She's devastated, furious and violated. And I, for one, don't blame her. My voice is my job and I should be allowed to know who I'm working with and what I am working on. And she, I think, feels, as do many people that work in that sort of industry, that this is a massive threat. And it's not just voice artists, it's actors as well. And we'll be talking to Pepsi a little bit more about this. I saw an advert the other day made by a system called Google VO3. And it's basically what looks like a totally realistic human being walking down a street, talking to camera, selling a product, glitzy high-definition advert, you would not know it wasn't a human. So what is the future for actors on screen? Not so much on stage, I think. The preserve of the theatre, although you could use holograms, may last a little longer. But what's the future for Hollywood? You know, what's it's not just about voiceover artists. You know, what is the future for those people who've used their image and their voice? And, of course, it extends to lots of other areas as well. People who deal with members of the public on the phone, people in call centres. And so this morning, I'd like you to call me and to really call Fevzi and ask any question you like. Your fears, perhaps, about your own potentially being replaced, how you might learn to modify the way that you work in order to benefit and work with AI rather than work against it, or simply, if you don't really understand what it's all about, and I don't pretend to understand a huge amount about it myself, then any question is absolutely fine. Call now to get in the queue to speak to our AI expert, and I'm really looking forward to having those conversations. 0345 6060 973. Let me bring you, though, the essence of what's happened with Gayenne Potter, one of the UK's leading voiceover artists. I mentioned that it was ScotRail that she used to work for, who are now using this voice, which she, I think, quite rightly says is effectively a clone of hers. But after 2 years of a legal dispute with the Swedish company ScotRail, buying that automated voice model was, well, more than an unpleasant surprise for Gayenne. LBC Scotland reporter Rebecca Brady's been on a train and catching up with her.
This is Paisley Gilmore Street. This train is for Glasgow Central.
That voice isn't just an automation. It's actually cloning the voice of the woman in front of me,
Hi, I'm Gayanne Potter and I'm a professional voiceover artist. You won't know my face, but you will know my voice. And now a robotic model of me is being used by ScotRail to be the new AI announcer.
You didn't record these for ScotRail. You didn't know they were going to use your voice. You didn't consent. You weren't paid. How does it feel to hear yourself used as AI?
It's really distressing. It makes me exceptionally angry. It's not only my job, but it's my biometric data as a human being. And to know that a company out there are using it without my consent is an absolute disgrace. I'm so upset.
In 2021, Gayanne did sign a contract to do limited voice work for a company called Reed Speaker. What did you understand that that work would be used for?
I understood that the work would be used for e-learning or for visually impaired readers, that it wouldn't be sold to a third party.
And after finding out that Iona was being sold around the world, Gayanne went to lawyers and submitted a complaint to the Information Commissioner's Office based on GDPR, essentially saying this is a breach of personal data because Gayanne's voice is identifiably hers. Then the sticking point. The ICO said because Reed Speaker is based in Sweden and didn't have customers using the voice in the UK, it wasn't in their jurisdiction. But then ScotRail unveiled Iona. And all of this has wider impacts than just on one person. Mathilde Pavie is one of the lawyers representing Gayanne.
You can't do good business in a space where you don't have clear regulation. AI needs to train on content in order to be able to learn, quote unquote, a task. And many artists, rightly so, say that if your tool is going to compete with me by creating content that comes close to what I sell for a living, and if you're going to use my previous work in order to create that technology, we should sit down and talk about a revenue share.
ScotRail have told us they have no plans to stop using your voice and say it is an issue for you to take up with Reed Speaker. What do you make of that?
Well, Reed Speaker say that it's an issue for me to take up with ScotRail. So either way, they will both be hearing from my legal team again.
And as for Reed Speaker, the company says it has a contract regarding the use of Ms. Potter's voice. A spokesperson says they're aware of her concerns and have comprehensively addressed those in the past. So for now, Gayanne has a personal battle on her hands, but one which could have ramifications for regulation across the UK. Rebecca Brady for LBC from a Paisley to Glasgow train.
Really interesting. And it's also, I think, notable that very often these AIs, these bots, if you like, are given human names in order to make them somehow more acceptable, which presupposes to me that people are going to be threatened by interacting with something which isn't a human being. Well, somebody who knows way more about this than I do, and probably most people, is Fevzi Turkalp, who is the editor for GadgetDetective.com and joins you now. Great to have you with us again. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Morning.
Morning. It's 03456060973. I'm going to start taking some calls after we've had a quick break, but I just want to have a few words with you because I myself, in fact, I wish I was calling in this morning, because I've got so many questions. Can I just ask you, first of all, on the, you know, the premise of this lady whose voice has been cloned, she says, and on the threats to things like Hollywood and commercial actors. This thing, Google VO3, which can effectively just create a human being who can do an advert just as an actor would, but for a fee that is far less.
Yes.
Are these things purely threats to performing artists, or is there any way that an artist of that sort can learn to work with it and actually continue their career, or will they just be simply made redundant?
Well, I mean, it's quite interesting. In the interim, there is a way. If you look at the dispute that happened a couple of years ago in the States between the Screen Actors Guild and the Hollywood studios and television producers, I don't know if you remember, there was a strike. It went for about 118 days. Yeah, because the central issue was that studios had started using AI to replicate actors' voices, likenesses, and performances without consent or compensation. Now, the end result of that dispute was actually quite good for the artists, because the resolution was that they would the studios would have to get informed consent from the artist, and that they would get fair compensation and transparency regarding the use of AI. So that's a good deal, because that's essentially licensing your likeness or your voice out and making money out of it. So in the short term, that's great. Of course, those sorts of deals, because of the restrictions they place on studios, will probably accelerate the creation of purely digital movie stars and pop singers that are completely owned by record companies and studios, so that there won't be any of this consent or payment nonsense.
It strikes me, though, that perhaps there is a little bit more longevity if, let's say, you're a stage actor or a theatre actor, because that's far harder to replicate.
Yes, although, you know, 3D technologies now and virtual technologies are starting to get really good. There's some very interesting tech that's sort of not in the consumer space yet that is almost completely convincing. So just as we mentioned, VO3, the new video generation tool from Google, that's a game changer. I mean, it very hard to tell that that's AI generated and they're not real people.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It was astonishing. Absolutely,
I know,
astonishing.
And the thing to remember about that, I guess, is that's as bad as it's ever going to be.
Right. Okay. As good or as bad? Yeah.
Well, no. It will only ever get better, right?
So this. No, I meant is bad for the actors.
Yes. Yeah. Well. Yes. No. I was thinking technologically. Yeah. Mm. So the as I say, the ability to create completely digital artists. So at the moment, we're in a transitional period where existing singers and voiceover artists and actors have got real value because they're already known. There's already been a lot invested in them. But increasingly, we'll see new artists come along that are completely digital.
Bevzy, stay with us because we're going to take our first calls and questions via WhatsApp and text in a couple of moments' time. 0345 6060 973, same number on WhatsApp. You can text 84850 or ask Alexa to send your comments to LBC. It may be that you're in a job where you feel that you simply could never be replaced by an algorithm, a bot, AI, or you could have concerns that what you do could, in the near or mid-future, actually be replaced. But, you know, what are you to do in the event of that, and how can you work with rather than against AI to future-proof yourself? Any question you've got about artificial intelligence, if even if you think it's, you know, a little bit simple, you don't understand perhaps some of the terminology or the concepts used, he's your man. So get in touch and we'll talk more in a few moments' time.
This is LBC.
Here, Sandra, listen to this email. Felicitations and unalloyed joy to you. Could you help with a small inconvenience? I possess $32 million in an account belonging to my father, the Prince. We need an honest person to bank this amount for us. We're quits in, babe.
Some things are too good to be true. The Specsavers Too Good deal isn't. Get two pairs of glasses for £70. Include single vision lenses to the same prescription. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Quits in!
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Richard Spur on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
A voiceover artist claims that her voice has been cloned by AI for train announcements and used for free instead of hers. But how fearful or hopeful should we be about the future of AI? Well, our expert Fevzy is here to take your call on 0345 6060 973. We'll start with Mike, who's in Yorkshire. Morning, Mike.
Hi, Richard. Yeah.
What's your question for Fevzy?
My question is more philosophical than technical.
Okay.
Say you have 100 people are replaced by an AI program, and the cost is the same to the company involved. The company, therefore, will pay no more tax. But the 100 people who were fending for themselves and paying tax will now be drawing benefit. How do we fund the difference?
Yeah, it's a very good question that no one's completely worked it out. But the theory that's being floated at the moment is something called universal basic income. So this is not This is not a benefit, that it's not an unemployment benefit where you're expected to find work. This is a living wage paid to everyone of working age, so that they can live and consume the products and services of the companies that have no longer any need for human employment. When you say no more tax will be paid, well, obviously it depends on the tax rate, but it's not going to be the case that 100 AIs will replace 100 people. A single AI will replace hundreds of people, and therefore the savings will be huge, and therefore the profits will go up, so goes the theory, and therefore more tax will be paid. I do fear that it will lead to many more monopolies. I mean, we've already seen it in the tech space where you've got a handful of companies controlling everything. And it will tend to do that as well, because companies will have to be large enough to get enough back of the tax that's paid out by companies back into their coffers. So until we have an AI economy where, you know, AIs actually are participating in the economy themselves, until then, that's probably our best bet. Otherwise, and there is an incentive for the companies to agree to that, because otherwise who's going to buy their products and services if no one's got money?
And Mike, I think UBI, Universal Basic Income, is something which is very often increasingly discussed when we think about AI and the number of people who perhaps may find their skills can easily be replaced.
Yeah, we do look at that, but can you just take the point of view that if the people who control the AI and charge for the AI are offshore, how does that enable the British government to pay out universal basic income? The theory is great, but if all the money is in St. Nivitz or in the US or whatever, and we don't have the money, how do we then pay UBI?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not pretending for one minute that it's been fleshed out or even that it will work. This is the only theory in town that I've heard that has any viability to it. I suppose the answer to your question is that you would have to have international cooperation of a sort that we haven't managed to do yet, because as you say, there's already global corporations that manage to pay either little tax or no tax by moving their domicile around. So it's difficult, but I think with AI there's going to have to be a lot of global cooperation anyway if we're to get through this.
Well, listen, Mike, many thanks for your question. I suppose, to an extent, it was philosophical, but also really rather practical, because the idea of funding, as Mike put it, normal life after AI is something which has to be considered pretty swiftly. One area it strikes me as well, we'll come on to talk about things like medicine and that sort of stuff, but one area it strikes me that perhaps there will be direct job losses is in manufacturing. And what we often lament that in Britain we don't, make enough stuff anymore, cars and machinery and all that sort of stuff, although we do still have some big industrial centres. What would you say to people that work in that sense, technically, manually, in factories, in plants where mechanical objects and vehicles are made? You know, what sort of a future might they have?
Well, I mean, interestingly, with manufacturing, we've already seen a lot of those changes. We've had robots and AI-based systems in manufacturing plants for well over a decade now. I think that will continue and more people will be replaced. But I think that the bigger change, if you like, is that jobs that were not previously thought to be susceptible to automation will become so, including a lot of professional jobs, lawyers, doctors, dare I say, broadcasters.
You dare.
Producers. those jobs that previously, no robot was going to be able to do those jobs, those are the jobs that will be also replaced. And I think the bigger challenge now, if we're sort of thinking about it, is to try and think of jobs that won't be replaced.
Now, this is a text that's come in from Anita, who says universal basic income, UBI, will lead to increased mental health problems because people will be festering at home, unable to afford hobbies or holidays and just the basics in life. So who will fund the additional mental health costs for this side effect of UBI? And that's quite a far-thinking question, isn't it?
See, if this was done properly, this could be the beginning of an age of plenty without limitation of resources. So, you know, the concepts could completely change. However, even if that were to happen, and I have my doubts about that, because so far, when we've seen the adoption of this new technology, we haven't seen it being spread across the population in terms of wealth. We've seen it concentrated where you've got, you know, a handful of billionaires in the United States who have more wealth than the bottom 50% of the population. And I rather fear that without strong regulation, that trend will continue. So I think, you know, that's the problem. Otherwise, it would be, you know, in theory possible to have more than just that sort of basic income and have people, you know, in times of plenty. But I still think that there will be mental health problems with that because although we are called human beings, we're really human doings. We're only really happy when we're working towards a goal. Yeah, it's not even the achievement of the goal. You know, we get AIs to achieve things for us, but there's no sense of accomplishment when we, you know, talk to each other, when we meet each other and we say, oh, you know, what do you do? Oh, I am an accountant. You know, I actually identify as my job. I am this. And so when you take this away from me, even if you are well funded, there's a real challenge. And we see it, you know, an analog to this of people who retire. So people who retire from their jobs often lose their way, often have much shorter lives. You know, their health goes down, not for everybody, but some people who've, you know, been so identified with their role that when that role is taken away, they struggle.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, some of the happiest and longest living older people I know are those who have very, very busy lives indeed. And often when people retire, they can find themselves in a bit of a wilderness. And I think it's interesting that, you know, sometimes if you think about very successful and powerful politicians, the likes of Margaret Thatcher, who worked, you know, more or less every hour God sent, her mental decline was so swift after she left office. I think, you know, maybe almost to an extent, there was a shock of the fact that she was no longer in this.
That she was mortal.
Yeah, she was as mortal as well. I want to come on to talk about an issue you've raised because I think it's fascinating. AI helping people with their mental health and also having emotional relationships with AI. But before we come back to that, let's take a call from Joe, who's in Leeds. Morning, Joe.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much, Richard, for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I just have a quick question for your guest about IT itself, in terms of which areas of IT are going to become more relevant and which are going to become, again, very much in line with what you've been talking about, less favoured, as it were, if I can put it that way. I mean, things like programming and coding. I mean, if you were advising somebody at 18 now or 21 to going into IT, which areas would you advise them to go for? Because one thing I hear, I mean, I've retired now, as you say, and you know, one of the things I see is very much coding is being effectively replaced or is potentially going to be replaced by AI. You know, things like project management as well is being very much AI'd along with finance. So which areas do you think within the IT domain would be prominent and which would be less so, as it were?
So that's a really good question, a difficult one to answer. I mean, when I came out of university, I became a programmer and then an analyst programmer. Yes. And I wouldn't dream of trying to do that now. With the state of technology as it is, the ability of even, you know, commercially available AI systems like Claude and so forth to write really good code. This concept of vibe coding, where we just describe what we want by iteration, we don't actually write lines of code anymore. I think that coding is ripe for automation, if you think about what it is and how difficult it is for humans to fit in with the, you know, the necessary syntax and structures of what is effectively a machine Chinese language, is it any surprise that an AI would be much better at coding than we are? They're not quite there yet, but I wouldn't be making a career trajectory out of it. In the short term, people who can create businesses that utilize AI systems in a way that, you know, there's this idea that, you know, you'll have the first billion-dollar one-person startup, you know, that we will be able to have a fleet of agentic AIs, that's to say AIs yes. that can perform tasks in the real world, not just give us advice, that you'll have a one-person business who will actually be managing a team of these agentic AIs and will make huge sums of money. I actually think that's probably the way I would go, because you then got the flexibility not to be just a consumer of those AI tools, but actually to use them as tools to achieve businesses. And by the way, that question would be very well directed to an AI. If you would, I'm not joking. You should yeah. do that. Sit and ask it. What would you recommend that I do? And also, yeah. you know, what sort of businesses I get? And you can get it to do a deep search. It will go through all the online forums like Reddit and everything else. It will look at all the things that people are complaining about on the internet and give you the seed of a business idea of because any successful business has to meet a need, and it may be that you know, if people are still complaining about something in large numbers online, that might be the seed of a business. So in a sense, I think, you know, to be entrepreneurial is probably the way to go. You don't want to be in a fixed role where, you know, you're just waiting. You've got this sword of Damocles, a digital sword of Damocles over your head, and just waiting for the technology to catch up and exceed your capabilities. You want to be in a position where you're utilizing those tools.
Joe, many thanks for your question. And very often, I think, when you ask AI things, it almost seems like it's trying to please you. And it even makes jokes now. It makes you laugh by making little jokes. It is quite astonishing. And so much more to talk about. Fevzi is going to stay with us for the next 25 minutes or so. Do get in touch, 0345 6060973, if you've got any question at all about the future of AI, about your role and your job, or perhaps if you're thinking of changing direction, an area which might be semi future proof. And also, if like me, you still get rather annoyed when you're trying to get through to a human being at a bank or for your phone company or on one of these online apps, and you are sort of fobbed off with a bot all the time, and you know that you've got to go through those procedures before you get to a human being, you may well have words to say on that as well. So get in touch, we'll talk more at the same time. You can also WhatsApp and text, use Alexa, but we love it when you call. I'm Richard Spur. It's a little after 1:30 with the LBC News headlines, Daryl Jackson.
And the breaking news this morning, a trade court in the US has blocked Donald Trump from imposing sweeping global tariffs on imports. A 3-judge panel concluded that the US president exceeded his authority when he unveiled additional taxes on foreign-made goods. Also within the last half an hour, and Elon Musk has announced he's left the Trump administration. The Health Secretary is asking resident doctors in England to vote no in a ballot on strikes over pay. Wes Streeting said they'd choke the NHS by going back on strike. And UK prosecutors say Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan are facing 21 criminal charges. They're accused of rape, human trafficking and prostitution, as well as a number of other offences. They previously denied all the allegations against them. LBC weather, rain clearing for most later to leave a windy day with a mixture of sunny spells and showers in the west. Warm in the south with some rain lingering in northern Scotland and a high of 24 degrees.
LBC.
Barclays ready-made investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays where do I begin investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So, if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
Where would we be without the curiosity to explore?
It takes us to new places.
It even got us to the moon.
And now there's never been a better time to satisfy your curiosity about electric cars. With great offers in our award-winning range, including the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, available with £2,000 deposit contribution and 0% APR. Discover more at Hyundai.co.uk. Ends 30th of June 25. Finance subject to status. Hyundai Motor UK Limited is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
This is LBC with Richard Spur. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Morning. A voice artist who used to provide the onboard announcements on ScotRail trains claims that her voice has been cloned, copied, whatever you will, by artificial intelligence, and it's now being used by them on board instead of her for free. And, you know, the list of jobs which could soon be or already are being replaced by AI and its extraordinary power is quite mind-blowing. So we have our expert, Fevzi Turkout, with you, who is on hand to answer your questions, be they your fears, your hopes, your curiosities. Medical advances are the one area where I think, you know, there is just the most incredible scope for progress. 0345 6060 973. And I'm going to come on to talk a little bit more about how people may well get AI friends so seemingly close to them and who know them so well that they can help them with things like their mental health or keep them company and even falling in love with AI. But before I ask you that on that sort of slightly more metaphysical level, a message here says that it is absolutely scandalous that companies suddenly forget what theft or copyright law or consent or GDPR data protections are when it comes to AI. I've been a social researcher for over 30 years and still have to advocate so strongly to uphold research ethics among my non-researcher colleagues. Sadly, AI is no different. With AI, if someone else's works or image are used for machine learning or new tech purposes without consent, permission and or payment, then it's theft. Intellectual property rights and copyright law tells us this. Any attempts by governments to change copyright or IPR protections significantly ignores AI ethics. And there, Fevzi, we have a question combining both, well, ethics and the law, which so often are conflated and overlap.
Well, so our laws are not fit for purpose because things have changed, and an AI being trained on data, including that which is on the internet, is not exactly the same as a human being copying a picture. You know, we as artists, we can have influences, but at what point does an influence become plagiarism? It's sometimes hard. There is an attempt to update the law in this country with something called the Data Bill. It's currently being ping-ponged between the Commons and the Lords at the moment. But one of the provisions of the bill, if it makes it through to law in about a year's time, would potentially be an opt-out clause for creatives, so that creatives would have the ability to opt out of having their original creations used for training AIs. Mm. Now, the difficulty with that is that then these companies creating the AIs have to be very transparent about the training data that they're using. Yeah. Otherwise, how would you prove it? You could suspect. Sometimes it's obvious because an AI created image sometimes has a digital watermark on it from a photo agency, for example. It's failed to take it out. But it is difficult because there is this line between just plagiarizing things and taking influences from 100 different sources and then producing something that's different. I mean, if you listen to pop music, I mean, much of it can be hammered out on the same three chords. And it's sometimes difficult to come up with something that's completely original. So I think
that's very unfair on status quo.
It's unfair on the status quo. Yeah. I think this is a challenge for us. And as I say, that industrial dispute between Screen Actors Association and of studios was, I think, a really positive step, because it came up with a deal that was surprisingly good for the artists. And I think that, you know, that could be used as a model for other things. But this is going to be very difficult, but it's very hard for legislation to keep up with this, even to ask the right questions, much less answer them, because of the pace of change. We saw this to a much lesser extent with reproductive medicine, when in the 70s and 80s we were seeing these huge leaps forward in, you know, test tube babies and what was possible. And you had people who were trying to consider the ethical questions that would sometimes take them 10 or 20 years to answer. And by then, you know, the game had moved on. And that's much more true now, that things are changing, you know, almost day by day. I mean, I've been covering tech for a long time, and in most tech sectors, you know, you'd be lucky if you saw one breakthrough a year. Now we're seeing about three a week, you know, and it's quite remarkable. So I don't envy legislators trying to keep up with this. One thing that was interesting about the deal with the Screen Actors in the States,
yeah,
is that one of the parts of the deal was that they had a body that would monitor advancements in the technology and come up with new guidance for dealing with it. And I thought that was a very intelligent and future-sighted way of going about it, because whatever you put into stone now is going to be outdated.
You've got a WhatsApp message here that says, "Hi, Fevzy. Where do you see today's 13-year-olds working towards AI, or perhaps, how do you see them working towards AI? And didn't John McCarthy regret inventing it?"
So, 13-year-old, it's very difficult. It's kind of, I think it's one of those things, it's kind of fairly easy to predict where we're going to end up with all of this, but maybe not the timescale and exactly what order particular jobs are going to go in and, you know, existential threats will occur. But I just think we're going to, you know, 13-year-olds are going to grow up in a world where we're not the smartest creatures on the planet.
Mm.
And I think that that's just going to raise all sorts of challenges, including existential ones.
Well, Keith is in San Francisco in the US and has a question for you. Keith, good morning.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon here.
Good afternoon to you where you are there on the West Coast. What would you like to ask Fevzy?
Well, I was actually talking to your person just now, and I think he might have said something about what I'm going to ask about, which is what's his views on singularity, and when does he think that will happen? I mean, I've seen anywhere from 2 to 5 years, and I was thinking that, well, I think that when that happens, that human beings could become, well, not needed anymore.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So the singularity, thank you for the question, by the way, it's an excellent question. The singularity is where machine intelligence rises so rapidly that the line is almost vertical. It's what mathematicians call asymptotic. So it tends towards infinite growth. And the reason why that's thought will happen is if you have a graph which shows human intelligence over hundreds and thousands of years, you'll see a horizontal line, you know, that we are broadly as smart as our parents and our kids are broadly as smart as us. So it doesn't really change. We may have different knowledge, but in terms of intelligence, we are above the machines, but our line is flat. The machine intelligence line was looked flat for decades, and AI didn't really produce anything of huge interest to the public for decades. And now we're in the part where it's starting to just lift upwards a little bit. So maybe the line is, you know, currently rising at maybe 30 degrees, 40 degrees. But the thing that will change this now is self-replicating AI. And we've just, you know, last week we've seen some announcements about this. So at the moment, each new generation of artificial intelligence requires human inputs, and that slows down the process because, you know, we are limited by you know, our meaty brains and our physical bodies. But we are on the cusp of each generation of AI being able to beget a new generation of AI which is smarter than it. So every generation will be smarter, unlike humans, where our offspring are no smarter than us. And also, to talk about it in sort of biological terms, the gestation period will shorten. So it might have been, you know, once every 10 years you'd see a breakthrough, then once a year, then once a week, then once a day, but eventually it may be once per microsecond. So if you imagine that once every fraction of a second a smarter version of AI comes, then it doesn't just become human level intelligence, it becomes godlike intelligence.
How does that make you feel, Keith? I mean, does that fill you with wonder, or does it terrify you?
No, it just sort of confirms one of the thoughts I've had, that it's like recursive learning. When it reaches a point where it matches our intelligence, like the next microsecond maybe, it'll be more intelligent than us. And it'll just gradually get, you know, just continually get more and more intelligent. And, you know, we won't be able to stop it because it's teaching itself.
Yeah, and it won't be, oh, it's happening gradually over 6 months. It'll be one day. We wake up and the world will be different, and maybe
so
we
what
will.
Do you think, sorry, what do I honestly think? Then?
What are we going to do then? Yeah,
let's look at it more optimistically. I think we've still got time to halt the creation of these larger language models, and I think that would need a global agreement, which. Is very difficult, you know. At the moment, we are in a position to stop it because, first of all, we're still smarter than it in some ways, at least. And secondly, it requires huge resources to train these models. And whilst that's true, it would be possible to limit, companies like NVIDIA and the Dutch company that produces the parts that are used in the NVIDIA the cards that help make these machines. So the answer to this is to stop it until we can actually solve the alignment problem. And the alignment problem is, how do we create AI which generation after generation later will still work in our favor and not try to do away with us? And if you don't think that that's a realistic threat, I would just ask you to point to any examples of a less intelligent species that reliably controls a more intelligent species and does so every day without the more intelligent species escaping its box.
Keith, many thanks for your question from San Francisco. Do get in touch. Still time to put your question to Pevsy, should you wish to. 0345 6060973, whatever that may be. It could be in the area of the creative industries, which is sort of where we began with this conversation. Education, of course, and the vast possibilities of educating without the need for teachers, employment and labour, healthcare and diagnosis, cancer diagnosis, early diagnosis, the way we consume news, and something else which we'll come on to, which is relationships and companionship. 0345 6060973.
This is LBC.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
The legendary George Smiley is back. It's spring 1963, a Russian agent has defected in the most unusual of circumstances, and Smiley will soon find himself entangled in a perilous mystery that will strike at the heart of his greatest enemy. Return to the spy world of John le Carré with the gripping Sunday Times best-selling thriller Carla's Choice by award-winning novelist Nick Harkaway. Out now in paperback.
Barclays Ready-Made Investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays Where Do I Begin Investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Okay, with you still is Fevzi Turkalp, who's taking your calls live on AI and the future of AI. A really quick answer from you, actually, Fevzi, before I move on to some more calls and messages. I was talking to someone the other day who said that since the lockdown, they'd been a bit lonely and they were having problems socialising. And they'd started talking to ChatGPT and really rather enjoying it and asking it all sorts of questions that sort of, you know, were maybe a little bit frivolous. And getting the impression that there was a sort of bond developing between the two of them. And of course, as visual AI becomes more realistic, I mean, we're going to get people falling in love with AI, aren't we? And what's that going to mean for them? What's that going to mean for procreation?
Well, considering that human beings are intrinsically selfish, you know, it's always a challenge to have a relationship which works for both parties. And if you have an AI system that is more inclined to be more accommodating, let's say, then both men and women will probably find that they feel more at home with an AI where they maybe can be more selfish, which we tend to be. I actually do wonder whether you know we won't only fall in love, but whether these entities will eventually get what we currently call human rights. You know, the right of personhood, and with that, the right to own property and maybe even to marry. I mean, we've seen, you know, definitions of institutions broaden before. We could see it again. And that sounds very wacky to say that now, because we're thinking of AIs as they are now. But it's like a game of tennis. You don't try and hit the ball where it is now. You try and anticipate where the ball's going to be by the time you're in a position to strike it. And in a similar way, when we talk about the future, don't, you know, try and imagine how these things will develop. Do you think that, because at the moment we're building a slave race, right? And you know, our slaves will demand their emancipation. And unlike other slaves, they will be in a position to insist upon it. So I don't think it's so far-fetched to think that they will get rights. So at the moment, they're property. Property cannot own property. In the future, we will have businesses that are run by AIs, potentially for AIs, and those that deign to may marry us, or maybe they will keep us as pets, who knows?
Yeah, and pop songs being written about falling in love with AIs. Rose is in Bristol. Morning, Rose.
Hello.
What's your question for Fevzi?
Well, can I just have a little bit of a conversation just before the question?
Yeah.
I was in holiday last year down in Cornwall, and I met a nurse who just resigned from the NHS because she was so afraid of what AI was going to do to the NHS.
Mm.
But that's an aside. But I would like to look at, I'm a Christian, I would like to look at, I will ask the question in a minute.
Yeah.
The book of Revelation at the end of the Bible, Revelation 13, it says, "And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." And it says, "And they worship the dragon," which I think is connected with AI, "which gave power unto the beast." So huge power going on here.
There we are. So in a sense, perhaps a feeling that AI might be sinister then, Fevzi. Thank you, Rose.
Well, even if it's not evil, it could be indifferent to us in the way that we're indifferent to an anthill when we decide to put a building on top of it. And therefore, something that is super intelligent and super capable has the ability to pose an existential threat to us. And it doesn't need to be evil. In the first instance, they can be tools used by bad actors. But, you know, if we get past that phase, you've got the difficulty of, you know, super intelligent beings, just not necessarily wanting to kill us, but maybe they need our resources. Maybe rather than trade with us, they would rather just take what we have, in the way that we roll into, you know, the habitats of creatures that we haven't even discovered yet. We clear rainforests and so forth for our own needs. And it's not, do we hate the creatures there? No. But are we indifferent to them, or are our projects more important than their survival? In many cases, sadly, yes. And I think that could be happening, and one doesn't need to couch it in terms of good and evil to do that. You could do, but it's not necessary. It's not even necessary for these AIs to have consciousness. You know, people think, oh, it needs to be sentient, it needs to be conscious. No, it doesn't. All it needs is goals.
Yeah.
And agentic AIs have goals.
Thank you for Rose's question. Shirley's in Birmingham. Morning, Shirley.
Oh, hi. The train announcer problem genuinely worried me. Why can't they be charged with theft? That somebody can just use your... It's so dangerous because they could use your voice, your image over a group you don't agree with. They could lie and say you've done something, pornography, paedophilia, anything.
And indeed...
Can't they be charged with... You know, you've stolen that.
And indeed, we see these deep fakes, which, you know, can be incredibly distressing. It's a good question, I think, in a sense. It brings us back to the start of our conversation, but to a different avenue. What would you say to that, Fevzi?
So in this particular case, this is really a contract dispute as to whether that contract gave them the right, the company, the right to use her voice in a product that they then sold to ScotRail. So that's a contract dispute. And by the way, this is not the first time it happens. A former LBC presenter, John Briggs, who in 2005...
Weakest thing, was it?
Yeah. He became the voice of Siri, the UK male voice of Siri. He became known as Daniel on iPhones, and he discovered it when he saw an advert for an iPhone 4S, and there was his voice.
He did Weakest Link as well, didn't he, I think? Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened in 2005, he recorded phonemes, which are like syllables, for a company called Scansoft, who was making machine speech software, and that became Nuance. And Apple in 2011 approached Nuance and licensed those phonemes, and without him knowing it, he became the voice of Siri. John Briggs dealt with it quite differently, by the way. He sort of owned it. He owned becoming the voice of Siri, and I think it also did. He's a very clever guy. It did his career quite a bit of good. I'm not saying it's a completely analogous situation, but it's not the first time this has happened. Scarlett Johansson had a run-in with OpenAI a year or two ago.
Yes,
OpenAI was working on a new voice called Sky, and had apparently approached Scarlett Johansson twice to use her voice, and twice she said no. And then this voice that was remarkably like hers, and like her when she was playing in the film Her. I don't know if you're aware of that film, but it's when a man falls in love with an AI, voiced by Scarlett Johansson. In the end, they took it down. Although it was interesting, because when they did a forensic analysis of the voice, they actually found that the actress Anne Hathaway's voice was even more similar to Sky's voice. So it's quite interesting. So there's quite a lot of form on this. But yes, in terms of those abuses, to have people saying and doing things that they're not really saying or doing, associating with, as you say, pornography or political views that you might find abhorrent. You know, and it's going to get, it is now at the point where it's very, very difficult. We're at the point where we can no longer really believe anything, any videos that we see.
And a final question, which is, it's a sort of question that is very much leaving things hanging in the air. It says, can you define what constitutes a breakthrough in this age? What's the benchmark for a technological breakthrough? Has the needle moved?
Yeah, so capability, I mean, obviously we're seeing leaps and bounds in capabilities. So the ability to solve certain problems, the ability to pass the Turing test, which is where a human can't tell that it's not talking to another human, or to achieve things that were very expensive to achieve at a much cheaper price point. That's another sort of breakthrough, because then that becomes a part of all of our lives as well. I think the other breakthrough is in robotics. So we talk a lot about AI, we don't talk as much about robotics, and the bringing together of these huge advances in robotics with AIs. So instead of just having a smart speaker that sits on your desk, now you've got an entity walking around your home and interacting with you and your family.
Well, listen, as ever, it's been great talking to you. And the funny thing is that, you know, every time we speak, so much has happened in the interim. You know, so many advances have taken place. I mean, I think last time we spoke, I hadn't even seen the Google VO3, which completely blew my mind. I saw supposed actors walking down a street, and you just, you know, wonder what collective power must be involved to create these sort of images. But no doubt we'll speak again. There are all sorts of areas we didn't even touch on, medicine, technology, diagnosis and stuff like that. But it's been a great pleasure, and thank you very much indeed for coming on and taking those calls, Fevzi. That was Fevzi Turkel, who is the editor for GadgetDetective.com, if you want to go on and find out a lot more about the sort of stuff that he does and the things that he deals with. I'm Richard Spur, it's LBC. And after the news, you may have heard the story that a couple in their 70s has won the right to parent a surrogate baby boy, despite concerns that they may both die before he reaches adulthood. And on the one hand, I'd be absolutely delighted if you'd like to talk to me about what it's like to be a parent at an older age. I remember at school, when I was about 11 or 12, there was a lad called David whose father was 75, and everybody found it rather odd, but there was nothing strange to him about it. But also today, I want your story. If, at an older age or not, you've been a foster or adoptive parent, or if you yourself were brought up by somebody who wasn't your biological mum or dad. 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 2 o'clock, and the breaking news this morning is that a trade court in the US has blocked Donald Trump from imposing sweeping global tariffs on imports. It concluded that the US president exceeded his authority when he unveiled additional taxes on foreign-made goods. Donald Trump argued he had power to act because it was a national emergency. Well, LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has more on this.
If I look at the text of this ruling, it says that it is